Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Tree Lady Talks. We're off to the Croatian Forest Research Institute.
So hi Sylvia, it's so good to see you because we met in Malmo in November at the Swedish Tree Association Conference.
Thank you, Sharon. It was really nice meeting you and your husband at the Swedish Tree Conference, and I'm really glad that we can see each other again. I'm a senior researcher at the Croatian Forest Research Institute. I worked there in the past 16 years. My background is actually in forestry, but my work in the past 13 years has been focused on urban forestry and more specifically its social policy and governance aspects. Regarding the place of my work, Croatian Forest Research Institute is a public forest research institute. It was established by the state in 1974. And we conduct various forest and forestry-related research. There are about 80 employees, but only about 30 are researchers. What we do is we are in charge of state-relevant tasks, such as preservation of forest genetic material in the form of a seed bank, gene bank. We also do decades-long monitoring of forest health, also the effects of transboundary air pollution on forests, the so-called ICP forests network. But regarding my apartment, we are rather small and rather new, let's say, in the past maybe more than 10 years. We have only three people in the research group, and beside me there is a senior researcher, Dr. Dijana Vuletic, who was my boss at the time when I started. And we have one postdoc, Dr. Martina Kicic.
Lovely. So how did you get into forestry in the first place? What were you interested in as a child and your early studies? Because it's an unusual career for anybody. And there are fewer women involved in forestry and tree professionals. So what was your personal journey?
Well, actually, I was enrolled at the Faculty of Forestry in 1999. To be honest, at the moment when I was joining the Faculty of Forestry, I did not know what it all encompasses and what my future work should be. I thought just, oh, it's green, it's forest, everybody likes forests. And I wanted to know more about how forest functions. I love trees. So that was really, let's say, enthusiastic and maybe idealistic idea of forestry. But then when I finished the Faculty of Forestry, I had a period of maybe 3 years when it was really difficult, you know, to find a job in forestry, because majority of the jobs is in the public sector and we have one national forest company. And in the end, I joined the call by the Forest Research Institute. They were calling for research assistants for various research projects. And there I started with the field, with the topics that we never used to learn about at the Faculty of Forestry. So it was like starting from scratch, you know. We started with the social policy and governance studies, which is something that was not really taught at that time in the early 2000s at the Faculty of Forestry. But I realized that it's so interesting. So I begin to love it very much. And my work, as I said, is more like social policy and governance aspects related. And in the past 13 years, it's about urban forestry. But how I started with urban forestry is also interesting, because we had a small regional collaborative research project in 2010. And it was a part of a bigger capacity building project of the European Forest Institute that is located in Finland. And It included various forest faculties and institutes in several Western Balkan countries, including our institute. And as a part of the capacity building, we were supposed to develop our own regional research proposals. And then we started with the topic, let's start with people, because that was not much of the topic in our field, and how people perceive and use urban green space, because such studies were not existent, at least not on a bigger scale and not really in a comprehensive manner. So we were a bunch of young, you know, researchers, junior researchers. We were fully enthusiastic. We had a small budget, but we managed to conduct such a study in 7 cities and 5 countries in Southeast Europe. Besides Zagreb, where I live, we did it also in Bosnia, you know, in Banja Luka, Sarajevo, in Serbia, in Novi Sad and Belgrade, in Montenegro, in Podgorica, and in Macedonia and Skopje. So when I look back, I'm still very proud that I was part of that project, because it was the first one, you know, that systematically addressed the topic of human nature interaction and perception regarding urban forests and green space. And the results were also surprising, because despite living in different countries, in different cities, with different policies and funding opportunities, the perception of people of urban forests and green space was somewhat similar. And people also identified similar issues, like issues related to incivilities in terms of vandalism, behavior of other people in green space, or also the perceived lack of recreational equipment, infrastructure, perceived lack of maintenance, and so on. So the overall conclusion was actually that we need more green space, and then we need better maintenance, and we need to put more emphasis on raising awareness among people from the
Well, it's universal,
kids,
isn't it, Sylvia? So you started this in the 2000s. Well, I remember being a tree officer in the late 1980s in the UK and became quite quickly aware that it wasn't really about the trees, it was about the people. And it was about how the people perceived the trees. Now, they were different times, but people still either wildly passionately for the trees, or if they owned it, or it was their neighbours who they didn't like, they were passionately against the trees. And it became quite quickly, and I think that most local government or municipality officers relate to the fact it's about managing people as much as trees. And in those times, there wasn't a lot of research about public perception of trees, and it has become, you know, you described that very exciting early time of science in the year 2000, and you're a young researcher, and that's really helped inform public policy, hasn't it? Because if we don't understand what's going on, but that time is also against a backdrop in the last 20 odd years of an increasing awareness of climate change. Now the urgent necessity for us to address this. And I think nearly all people now accept that we've got a huge problem on our hands. And again, I think if we can understand how people feel about nature and how that is changing with the urgency of the time that we're living in, the better that we can to make things better. So let's dial back a little bit and talk about where you are right now, because you're in a place where I've always wanted to visit, which is Croatia. So describe to me what the treescape is like as you walk through the streets into the park. Is it a very green city?
Well, I live in, even though our institute is in a small town outside Zagreb, I live in Zagreb. I've been living here in the past 30 years, so I know it very well, both privately and professionally. When we look at the city of Zagreb in terms of the green space, it's rather green. city. And 2 years ago, it was the second on the list of greenest European capitals. The list was compiled by European Environment Agency. So we always say that we have about one third of the area covered by forest, one third is agricultural land, and there is a built area. And within that built area, you have a lot of parks, street trees, individual trees, other green spaces as well, recreational areas, and so on. So in terms of the total amount, let's say, it's rather green. But when we come to more detailed look of where those greens and how they look like and so on, I would say the distribution is not ideal. And there are some areas where there is more scarce, let's say, green space and less trees than we expect and want. And I want to just mention the very pronounced rule that was talked about lately. It's called 330-300 rule, that says that everyone should have a view from their apartments or school or business place. They have to have a view to at least three trees. The cover of tree cover in their neighborhood should be minimum 30%, and the distance to the nearest public green space should be no more than 300 meters. So, of course, in some areas it's possible to have it, some are more densely built, especially when we talk about, let's say, maybe historical towns and so on. It's not easy to achieve such a distribution. But this is not, you know, a problem just for Zagreb as a city. It's a problem, I believe, everywhere in the world. Very small number of cities, I believe, are can actually meet those ideal distribution goals.
I mean, that's a wonderful, quite simplistic idea. That's a genius idea of friend of the show, Cecil Konijnen-Dyke. I know from the privilege of speaking to people around the world and listening to various international webinars that this relatively new idea is really gaining traction in public policy. So it's a 330-300 rule, and it's brilliant. So in Croatia, what are the laws regarding trees? So let's say I've got a tree in my front garden. I don't want it anymore. Can I just cut it down?
Well, regarding the laws, it depends where the trees are. We can start with the yard example. It is not possible to cut a tree without the permission, at least not legally. But the other point is whether people actually to comply with those rules. I would say that trees in the forests, let's say, are covered by laws, forests and nature conservation. In urban areas, public forests, including forest park, are managed by the National Forest Company that is dealing with all state forests, stately owned forests. It's called Croatian forests. But trees that are in other public urban green spaces are under the city administration, and it's maintained by municipal companies in case of bigger cities and towns, and smaller municipalities don't have those specific companies because of the budget restrictions, and sometimes they don't need, you know, such a special company. But there is also some small private companies. Also, when it comes to private forests, you need to have a permit, you know, to cut a tree, and professional has to make a decision whether your tree is unhealthy, that it needs to be cut, and so on. So, but when it comes to private gardens, I don't think that monitoring of what is happening in the private yards is in place, which is something missing. So people can do more or less anything. And I think that what is really said that in older neighborhoods, you have trees with yard, houses with yards. And then after some time, when trees are overgrown, you can see the evidence, you know, of removing trees and even soil sealing, which is kind of sad, because it decreases the total amount of the green space that people can actually enjoy. Even they cannot enter someone's yards, they're still enjoying the benefits of having trees in the neighborhood or better view, let's say. So it's something that also in some of our studies in the city of Zagreb, citizens point that it's like negatively perceived when people do that. But I think it all boils down to public awareness. As we discussed, people should be aware about the benefits of trees. And I think in the long run, it should prevent people to make such decisions and also to protect trees. And it will decrease some negative things regarding trees, including vandalism and so on.
Yes, that's right. And you talked about things not being monitored, and I think that again is a universal problem in the UK. And although we have very good legislation, and there are quite frequently there are prosecutions through tree preservation order or trees in conservation areas or felling licenses, I mean there is activity there, but it's all down to resourcing. And something that I get on my high horse about is I think that every municipality should have a green infrastructure enforcement officer, somebody whose job it is, who has a working knowledge of trees, forestry, ecology and landscape, to make sure that things are, the laws are adhered to. In the UK, that would also be planning permission, and for that to be funded some way. But I wonder also about, let's say I'm a householder, I want to build something in my front garden, I want to build a garden office, and there's a tree in the way. Or maybe a developer wants to put up a new block of flats in Croatia. In terms of the existing trees and also potential for new planting, what is the law and best practice in Croatia for that?
I would say regarding the development projects, what I can observe in the field, in the city and everywhere, you know, is that development projects are really scarce when it comes to green space, including trees, and trees specifically, because they take more space and they take a lot of maintenance. So when you develop, let's say, a building complex, sometimes it's just a small patch of grass and nothing else, and maybe a few shrubs. But when it dies, nothing happens, you know. When you got this building permit, then it's over. So they are not, as far as I know, monitored in the long term, so that the city makes sure that green space is still there, how it looks like, that is maintained. And also, as far as I know, there is no prescription how those green patches should look like, you know. Should it be only grass? Should it include trees? And how it should look like to be actually eligible to be a green space? Or is it just, you know, for show? So what I see in some areas in the city, you can see buildings that have zero space. So the whole plot is used for the building.
Gosh.
So I think we still need a lot of work to actually raise awareness also among the developers. They're not all the same, you know. I'm just saying we have a new building development in the city center that has a really nice green space and everything is designed nicely. But this is not the rule, you know. But I believe it also comes to the public, what they expect. If they want to buy apartment in a building that has nothing green around and there's nothing close to their building that can be said to be green, then it's also the matter of how public value green spaces.
Yes.
So that they demand from the contractors that they deliver green space and it should be maintained and everything according to the rules of the profession.
Yes, so raising expectation of what people could actually spend their money on. And then that, and we're looking at a pure market-based model rather than looking at laws and legislation, quite frankly, the apartments are going to look nicer. They're going to be more attractive. So they should, in theory, be more expensive and more profitable. Although that brings along a whole nother discussion, which I'm passionate about, which is green equity, in that we all deserve and all should have wonderful green spaces for everybody, no matter where you are in life. But, okay, so it sounds to me like there's work to do in Croatia in showcasing what good looks like and hoping that that happens more and more. But maybe things moving in the right direction, which brings me back to the work that you do, Sylvia, and your study on perception of forestry. Perhaps you could take us through, first of all, the premise of the study, what the purpose and the objective was, and then the methods that you used and what you found.
Thank you. Well, I recently finished a five-year research project. It was funded by the Croatian Science Foundation, and it was about the participatory mapping of cultural ecosystem services of urban green infrastructure. And it was implemented in the city of Zagreb that I know best. It's actually the Croatian capital and the biggest city. The population is close to 800,000. We were interested in how people perceive tree-based urban green space in terms of several cultural ecosystem services. So we were focusing on place attachment, aesthetic appreciation, recreation, cultural identity, and educational opportunities. But at the same time, for the right balance, we also included the negative perception, because it coexists, often in the same green space and including these services. We were also interested to know how people attach those services and these services to different types of urban green space. And we conducted the whole study in two phases. In the first phase, the qualitative phase, we did focus group interviews with citizens. In each city district, we talked with a group of people who live in that city district, how they perceive urban green space. And later on, we had a quantitative phase, which was related to development of the application for the participatory mapping of services and these services. It's called Public Participatory GIS. And it was developed for the city level to actually quantify this perception and its distribution based on the services and also based on the type of the urban green space. In this first part, we actually talk with them about their favorite green spaces, what green spaces they find beautiful, what they use for recreational purposes, what they think are important for cultural identity of their neighborhoods or even the entire city. And also what green spaces they know that can be used or are already in use for educational purposes. And for all those services, let's say we ask them, to explain why. What are the attributes, actually, the traits of this urban green space that are appealing for them, and they are connecting those to different services, and also to map those green areas on the map of their city district. And the results show that actually people recognized all those cultural ecosystem services, but to various extent. They can easily talk about place attachment, about the places they love most, about the beauty of the urban green space. But when we talk about the cultural identity or maybe educational opportunities, this is something that they maybe haven't thought a lot about that, or maybe it's not quite a priority in their mind. The results show actually that recreation is really important for people, and this is actually which draws them to the urban green space. And while they're there, they experience all other ecosystem services, let's say beauty. And also after that, let's say what they like the most in terms of the beauty of urban green space, I have to emphasize that they talked a lot about trees. And having trees in general is something that brings value to the urban green space and beauty. And also trees that have certain characteristics, such as, trees with beautiful flowers like magnolia or Japanese cherry, they're very valued. Or trees that have colorful leaves, for instance, beech trees with red leaves, or they have a nice shape. For recreational purposes, they also expect that it's accessible, of course. This is kind of a universal trait, that they have a certain infrastructure that it can be used. So it's not wild in a sense that they cannot find the way out. It has to have some basic infrastructure and equipment so that people can enjoy there. And after that, we did this quantitative part for the entire city, where people answered all those the same questions, but they can click on any green space in the city, not just in their city district. And this was really interesting because in the end, we collected a huge amount of spatial data, more than 5,000 spatial points, which is really excellent for us. And I have to say that we had to develop a specific application, which was not pre-existing. And there was not such a solution that would help us for our purposes available. So we developed our own application. It is called My Dynamic City Zagreb. And it is developed specifically for this purpose of participatory mapping of cultural ecosystem services and the services. It was developed in collaboration with the colleagues from the Humboldt University in Berlin. And involved were Professor Dagmar Haase and Dr. Sebastian Scheuer. So it was our urban forestry collaboration with geographers who helped us with this spatial infrastructure, let's say, application and spatial analysis and so on. And one of the most interesting results of that part is actually that most of the clicks that different types of urban green spaces received were in parts. And because I know how Zagreb looks like and how different types of urban green space are distributed, people have parks in every neighborhood, you know, in every city district, you can access at least one park. But when it comes to forests and other types of urban green space, they are not distributed, let's say, in every city district. For instance, you know, cemeteries, they are maybe in just a few city districts, or forests, they are mostly on the outskirts of the city, on the margin of the city, and not really in the city center. So parks proved really, really important for people for various reasons, you know, for various ecosystem services that they provide. And also we need to emphasize that just having green space is not enough. We as professionals know that we have to properly maintain it. And it's not always about the amount. It's also about what we do with those green spaces. They need to be high quality. They need to be well maintained so that we have people who are visiting there and so they can, you know, enjoy health and well-being benefits from those urban green spaces. So definitely promoting different types of urban green space besides parks, forests, and so on. Many even informal green space can provide many services and be really useful for recreational opportunities, let's say, to people. So we have to somehow have the whole mix in place.
Absolutely. So lots of things went through my mind. That was really fascinating. Thank you.
This episode of Tree Lady Talks is sponsored by Tree Plotter. Russell Horsey, tell us about Tree Plotter.
Good afternoon, Sharon. Good afternoon to your listeners, and thank you. So Tree Plotter is a software package designed for arborists, by arborists, like urban foresters, and it's all about trying to help you manage your trees better. So we're there to help you with the sort of tools to get the data you need so you can manage your trees, understand where your trees are, look at wider greener assets if you want to and how they make up your urban forest. And we're continually trying to customize our software to try and help our clients manage the risk of their trees, streamline their work, help engage with the public, which I think is becoming more and more important, and help them, you know, plan for the future of their urban forest. So that's what we do.
Lovely. And where can people find you?
So you can find us, go to Google, search for Tree Plotter, or you can look for me on LinkedIn. So Russell Horsey on LinkedIn, you can find me there. Contact us through either way.
Thank you very much.
Are there different things that people value depending on the age groups? For example, I may be completely wrong, do the older generations value beauty more and the younger value wilderness more, or is it fairly universally spread in terms of trends?
When it comes to human perceptions and attitudes towards trees in urban green space, many studies, including ours in some aspects, actually show that the importance of age as a variable. Recently, I read a study that was conducted in the UK by Forest Research about the attitudes of people towards urban trees and the management of trees. And it also showed that younger people are more detached, let's say, from trees and urban green spaces. But older people are more positive, let's say, towards trees.
Fascinating. Yeah. Somewhat concerning. And actually, to me, counterintuitive, but we have a problem. I believe this is international. I would love my international listeners to tell me wrong, that there is a real issue with young people coming into arboriculture, forestry, the green professions, landscape architecture, and horticulture. Actually, I can't speak for ecology. And we are really having a drive collectively and internationally to get young people involved with knowing that it's a wonderful job. But at the same time, we see the great work by, in my opinion, and Greta Thunberg and what she's doing to raise awareness on climate change. Somehow, that passion of young people about nature, you've only got to go into a school and talk about trees, it's not being transferred to it being a job. And I find it really interesting, that study that you've just reported. And so we have to keep communicating that trees are great and that they do so many different things for us in terms of our climate, our biodiversity, and our physical and mental well-being and ecosystem services, all the things that we know. That's fascinating. The other thing that you said, which I think is so true, that whilst your participants valued parks, that's what they were really clicking on, we can actually get those small benefits from a really small area of green space, even a single tree in a courtyard or a single line of trees on a pavement can do all of those things that I've just listed. And I wonder if your findings has actually changed how money has been allocated within the municipalities and managing those spaces. Has there been any positive, tangible outcomes from your work? Or is it too early?
Well, I would say it's too early because things move slowly, you know, from the research sector when we finish the research and when we have to translate it, you know, to the policy and decision makers, it takes a lot of time. And it's not really one-time workshop, you know, that we invite them and we tell them the results and that's it. And then finally they will be enlightened and go home and then continue working completely differently. It's not the case. It takes a lot of communication and collaboration with different stakeholders, because when it comes to urban green space and the forest and so on, there is a variety of stakeholders around those. So we are not talking only about the public, about the management companies and so on. So it takes a different approach to communicate those results, let's say, to city administration or maybe to a forest management company or some, I don't know, developers and so on. So I think it takes a lot of time from for researchers, you know, to actually promote the results in the right way and do it continuously.
I think sorry, I beg your pardon.
I just thought that to say that one way, what you actually do with the podcast is really great way of communicating in a really easily understandable and interesting way, you know, about the benefits of people. I think we, at least here in the research, we maybe miss this easy communication, which is not just, you know, Facebook and Instagram and those social media.
Thank you. And see, I think that the great work that you do as a research scientist, which I consider to be at the highest level, a really rigorous scientific study with ever such important data, the work now starts. You know, you've had the paper published and now it's all about communicating with the stakeholders because it needs to be acted upon. You have empirical evidence on how people feel about their green spaces. We have numerous academic studies and research on the good that they do for us. So now we all need to be more than ever communicators in whatever that looks like for your own personal skill set, be it writing, be it pressuring, be it one-to-one meetings, be it podcasting, and thank you for mentioning that, or anything. So I also think that the work you do is really important because it's not just about the study that you have done. All of those participants may have thought about their green spaces for the first time in a conscious way, rather than I've got to go and, you know, I'm going to take the dog for a walk, I'm going to play football with the children, and maybe I'm going to go and walk with my partner. They're actually thinking about that rather than just a doing thing. They're thinking of it as a being thing, that it is something, oh yes, actually, yeah. I maybe go and do those activities, but wow, look around me. And I think the power of the work that you do is to give people a new way of seeing And I think of if you think of all the individual people who've taken part in your study and studies like this, that maybe they go out the next day and they think, oh yeah, yeah, no, this is great, you know. And so I think it's number one, incredibly important and impactful during the lifetime of the study, but we have to take that forward.
I think you perfectly said it. And for me, it was really an excellent experience, especially the focus groups, because we were in person with people. Mm. It was before the pandemic in 2019. So it was really excellent to get together with people to see how they actually see the green space and the city in general where they live. And sometimes as professionals, we may think that they are not that knowledgeable, let's say, about the trees, but sometimes you got surprised. And also, like you said, when they participate in the research, it is not just us, you know, taking information from them and learning, but also it goes the other way. They learn about some things that they maybe have not been thinking about before. Mm. And like you said, they can actually start seeing some things in a new way. I have to say that a lot of people still have maybe a negative perception of forestry as a profession, as people who are just cutting trees, mm. doing nothing else, and raising money, you know, from selling wood. Especially in urban areas, it is the furthest from the truth that can be, because but you still have an opportunity, you know, to talk with them about their concerns, to try to explain them how everything works, how trees sometimes need to be cut, even though they maybe look nice on the outside. They may not be, you know, the right tree in the right place, or maybe the species was wrong for that place, or maybe they're sick and so on. But all they see is that the tree is cut. And for some people, that is really traumatic, let's say, experience. So
I wonder also, Sylvia, if you learnt anything apart from the scientific research, did you have any eureka moments of thinking, gosh, I've never thought of that before, from any of the participants?
I was just happy to see that we were able to reach diversity of age groups in our communication with the citizens. And this in-person communication was really good fit for, let's say, elderly, for senior citizens. They preferred more, you know, to come to the, I don't know, public library or places where we conducted those research, and to actually communicate with us in person than actually go online and, you know, fill in the questionnaire and click on the map. So in that sense, we were very happy that we were able to cover, you know, different age groups, even though younger population, let's say, was a little bit underrepresented in terms of participation, both in those in-person and online participation. But when you talked about the importance of age, we still need to study further, you know, how younger people, let's say young adults and kids and so on, think about urban trees. And this is, I think, where it's important to put the seed, you know, that trees are important. Let's say where trees are promoted, they actually, as the future, let's say, buyers of homes, they demand that they have trees and green space and all the other infrastructure, and not comply just with what they have now.
I totally agree. And I've had several conversations on this podcast about going into schools and just telling your personal story about trees. For listeners, if you work with trees and you love trees, go and have a chat with the local school group. And friend of the show, Simon Burville, from the brilliant Woodland Heritage Charity, actually takes in slices of wood which show the age of the tree. So a piece of ash that's 30 years old and what it actually looks like as well. So there's a whole lot of exciting things we can do as tree professionals. What's next for you in terms of research, Sylvia? Are you allowed to say?
Yeah, because we think that this project was rather successful in terms of development, this new application, testing it in Zagreb and so on. We are eager to replicate similar study in some other context, also in different geographical and climatic regions, like on the seaside towns and cities, in different forest parks. So we want to focus in our next project on forest parks because they're really rather big parts of urban green infrastructure in some cities. And we want to know how people use it, perceive it, and how to better improve the management and maintenance of these areas. So this is our, let's say, next project. And the one that is not really official project that is funded, but that I was doing for fun. And I'm doing it with the colleagues from 9 other European countries, mostly from the south, from the Mediterranean region. We are actually interested. We talked a lot about public participation and how people can actually contribute to the management and planning. And I started up with a study about how professionals perceive that the public can participate in different activities in terms of planning, management, and maintenance of trees in urban green space. And that study is ongoing at the moment, and I'm really looking forward to results. In my opinion, it could be different because professionals sometimes can be rather reluctant, you know, to involve people, especially in some, let's say, hands-on activities and so on, partially because they are constantly felt under pressure, you know, they, whatever they do, it's not good. If they cut the tree, if they cut the branch, if they do the pruning, whatever they do with the trees, someone is scolding them. So I think it might turn out that, especially in Croatia, it could be a rather negative, you know, attitude of professionals towards involving people. But we also want to know in what kind of activities. It could be really something hands-on, it could be really something in a planning phase. What is really said is that you can actually design a new park without involving people and just, you know, develop a green space according to what's, let's say, landscape architects wants to have in that place. And this is something that we want to change. And a part of that, I was involved as in a participatory process. I helped our local community board, which is a level of local self-government here in Zagreb, to develop a participatory process that included both professionals and the public, the people who live in our neighborhood. And it was about the future renovation of our park and the only park in our neighborhood. So it was really successful, and it was also promoted to the city administration, and they liked the approach. So I really hope that would be a good example for them how to approach this whole idea of developing new parks and also renovation of the existing parks.
I love that. And it, my mind went to two things. First of all, we all talk about our own experiences, don't we? Me being 21, 22 as a young tree officer and saying to my boss, I think we've got these bits of land dotted about with parish councils. We should go and plant trees for children. And they would say, well, we've never done that before. But it was brilliant. And we planted 5 woodlands, which I now can walk through. And it's great. And the second thing that went to my mind was very recently we did a podcast interview with friend of the show, James, a New York City tree officer. And he talked about his citizen program. And it was really inspirational about local people from all walks of life getting involved with hands-on tree care and looking at their city spaces and making a positive difference, and how joyful that is. Because I also find that if we do any job, this is a more general point, any job in isolation without speaking to others and communicating, it's very narrow and dry. And so as a tree professional working with the members of the public, yes, it will be all shades of experience, but it's all the better for it. So finally, Sylvia, what is your dream scenario?
In terms of trees?
In terms of urban forestry, trees, whatever you wish.
Well, I would say healthy and happy trees and healthy and happy people, because of accessible and high quality green space for everyone.
I love that. That's all about green equity and tree health and climate resilience, but the way that you describe it is brilliant. Sylvia, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and I was really delighted to be part of your journey with the podcast.